Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the July 27 edition of Commodity Week. Well, the drought has continued to spread across the United States. There are places that have been added in the last week, and the media has begun to talk even more about it. And the price of corn and soybeans went lower in Chicago. We'll find out why today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Dan Bossi of Ag Resource Company out of Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists in studio today include Matt Pennett of TGM out of Windsor, Illinois, Aaron Curtis of Midco from Bloomington, Illinois, and Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It comes to you from public radio at willag.org online. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming. If you'd like to follow me, you can do so individually. My Twitter handle, I just picked this one up, is Commodity Week. Let's begin today's discussion with this question, and we'll start on the soybean side. It's an August crop, and apparently Chicago just thinks that we've gone high enough, at least for the time being. It broke fairly hard, down 73 and a quarter cents in the August, and the November down 84 and a half cents on the week. Why did that happen, Matt Bennett?
Well, I think there's a variety of reasons. You know, when you enter the week and you're overbought is what you are, and then you have forecast for rain and forecast for a little bit of cooling, I think it kind of sets itself up for a little bit of a sell-off and maybe a washout of some of the week longs. And I think, you know, whenever we look at the week, at least we came back here on Friday and posted a good solid day. So I guess I'm not overly concerned about it at this point. I think that, to be perfectly honest, that we're underestimating the damage to the bean crop so far.
Aaron Curtis, would you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I would agree. I think a little bit of the hint of the some rain around, and we did see a little bit of rain around the last couple of days, kind of force some longs to the sideline. I think when you get up to these kind of prices, we're going to continue to see this volatility, especially as we head into August. And I think, unfortunately, I think we're going to see more weeks like this in terms of some of the volatility and some of the moves we've seen back and forth.
And Ellen Dearden.
I think we need to keep in mind, too, the number of long speculative positions in the beans at extremely high levels, and we're moving into the end of the month. Some of those guys like to take profits.
So Aaron mentioned the volatility. You expect the same kinds of things, at least for the first couple of days until we turn to August next week?
I would anticipate, and I think there's a lot of people that would like to buy some lower stuff the first of the week in anticipation that we would be up into the August 10th crop report.
And what are your expectations, Aaron, for that crop report?
Well, I think obviously we're going to see production continue to be downgraded. I think we're going to see a lot of crop tours over the next couple weeks that are going to show a lot of variability, but I think trending lower. I think, probably the question remains what the USDA does with demand. We all know that production is going to be on the lower side. The question is what they do with demand. I think that's going to be interesting to see.
Unlike the corn, where USDA may have some things that happen in Washington, D.C. that would impact demand, ethanol, for instance, soybean supply-demand figures really are less dependent on any of those kinds of mandates, although there is a bit of biodiesel. But worldwide, there continues to be strong demand, and USDA is reporting, at least at this point, strong demand for U.S. soybeans, and there just aren't many soybeans outside of the U.S. on the marketplace.
Yeah, there's no question, and I think whenever you look forward to the report, you got to ask yourself, you know, where are they going to slash? And obviously, they can kind of go wherever they want at this point and kind of slash demand, and I think you can kind of come to the conclusion on your own that demand rationing is going to have to be done by probably a pretty healthy, upward slope in the bean market, or something that we're not really foreseeing. Because I think when you talk to most agronomists, they'll tell you even a really good rain right now, why it's going to help the bean crop. It's not going to make, 40 bushel beans in a place where there's only 10 pods on a plant.
Any evidence that there's been rationing at all in the bean market?
Oh, we've seen a little bit of a pullback on the export side, but on beans, it's really pretty easy to track because every week we get an export clearance report, and every week or on a monthly basis, we see a crush number. So that should be reasonably easy to track.
And your expectations would be that the export market will stay strong?
I would think that we will stay strong, but I think USDA will cut that slightly anyway.
Again, let's go through the numbers for the soybeans. The August contract this week had a high of $17.62¾. Remember, we give you the weekly high and the low. The low on the week at $16.18. Settlement price there in the lead option at $16.84¼. August beans down 73¼ cents from last week. November soybeans at $16.03¼ were down 84½. September corn in Chicago, a high on the week at $8.24, the low at $7.74. September settled $7.98½, down 26 cents. December futures at $8 on the high. That's a new contract high and a new all-time high. $7.45½ was the low. A settlement price down 2½ cents at $7.93¼ on the week. So December corn futures made brand new highs, made lifetime highs, all-time highs, and still we're off 2½ cents for the week. That doesn't sound particularly good.
It doesn't sound particularly good, but I think whenever you come in here on Friday and post such a solid day, it might help you maybe not focus so heavily upon the outside down. But, whenever I'm looking at it, I guess to me, I think the biggest thing that jumps out at me is whenever you hear some of these crop report tours coming out and domes saying 117 bushel an acre in Iowa, man, that's really got to get your attention if you're a trader in Chicago still trading 132 or 3. I just think that there's a whole lot that we have left to learn about this crop, and I think that it's a whole lot worse in some places than what people are giving it credit for.
You agree?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think now that we quickly went up to $8 on futures in a relatively short amount of time, I think we're kind of battling this supply bullish side with this demand sort of bearish side. We have seen ethanol numbers slow down a little bit. We did have net cancellations on corn export sales this week. So I think that's causing some pause in the market and trying to get a feel exactly how much demand destruction we have. But, we're going to have some major crop tours going on the next couple weeks. We got some pretty big elevators are doing some crop tours in East Central Illinois over the next couple of weeks, and it's going to be really interesting to see what kind of variability they find out there.
Ellen, there are a couple of things on ethanol that are happening. Of course, there's some saber-rattling, I guess, in Washington, D.C. about the mandate and whether somebody should step forward and say this is doing economic harm and get the process started with U.S. EPA. On the flip side, when you look at the numbers, ethanol plants actually are doing okay, even at these high prices.
The majority of them are. The ones that have a lot of debt are still in the red. But then I think it goes back to we're looking at two products at the end game. They've got the DDGs and they've got ethanol, and both are reasonably high priced.
So if not ethanol, then that leaves the livestock sector that would have to cut back. And the evidence is saying what about the beef side?
Well, I don't think there's any question that there's liquidation going on across the Midwest. And, whenever I'm looking at this as a corn producer, I got to ask myself, okay, yeah, I don't really want the mandate cut so much. But then on the other hand, do I want to chase my entire livestock sector out of the Midwest? And so, obviously that's a bit of an exaggeration. You're not going to take the whole sector. But we're eliminating cows right now. And whenever we take pound cows to the sale barn, for the most part, they're not going to somebody else's pasture because in the Midwest, you have a hard time finding green grass anywhere. So I don't know. To me, Whenever you look at this thing, I think you have to consider that we are going to do demand destruction the higher that we go. And at some point, stepping in and at least changing the mandate, maybe dropping it 20-30%, probably isn't the worst thing in the world that would happen to us long term.
Any evidence that the feedlots in Kansas or Texas or Nebraska are cutting back?
I think we've seen some. I think we'd still kind of fleshing that out here a little bit as prices did, you know, rally pretty quickly in a short amount of time. But no doubt, I think we're going to continue to see some. And it's going to depend, too, on how much they come out of this, some of the drier patterns we've seen as far as pasture. And obviously, as we even the dry weather moves even farther west, I think we're going to see, you know, less of that moving north like we saw last year in Nebraska and some of those areas, because those areas obviously are dry, too. But I think it's going to kind of we'll see how this fall goes and see how it kind of fleshes out then.
We've rallied corn 6 weeks in a row, opened higher 6 weeks in a row. Will we do it for the seventh week when trade begins on Sunday evening?
I got to think that we will, unless we have a really big weather pattern shift. I think that there's going to be a lot of people that are saying, you know what, yeah, our crop ratings are down to, what, 26% good to excellent. There's not much farther they can go. But people are watching the poor to very poor very closely, and I think that, you know, there's not too many people that really want to step on the other side of this thing without some sort of a major pattern shift that maybe would really kick the beans, you know, big time, which would obviously hurt the corn.
There are three possibilities, I suppose, for both the corn and the soybean markets as to when the high comes in. One would be now, one would be harvest, and one would be sometime in the November-December timeframe based on previous history. Got a good guess on which one works?
Boy, it could fall into any of those time frames, but really strictly from a cyclical standpoint, we are in a time frame to make a major high in corn. And to drop corn prices from that high into 2015. We are in the time frame to make a major high in beans and drop prices into late 2014, early 2015. So I think we're in a very critical time frame.
A critical time frame. Okay, so let me come back with you then. Are you looking at 20, and I can talk to each of you about this, are you looking at 2013 sales at all then?
Not at this stage of the game, but I'm getting close.
I think you got to watch it. I think you'd be a little patient right now and kind of see where this thing goes here or short term.
You know, we've been talking a lot about just trying to learn from the past a little bit and looking at charts from 83 and 88. Obviously, we made the highs before harvest even started. But, you know, you talk to very many people in the industry right now, and they're saying you really can't compare this year to 83 or 88, you know, with the stock situations the way they were back then. And, you know, in my opinion, when are we going to make the high? Well, I don't know. I'm kind of like Aaron. I want to wait and see just a little bit. I think that this thing is probably not going to be making a high until we really know more about the crop. Once we know just how bad it is, even if it's horrific, that's when we're going to turn around and go the other way.
You know, we've looked at this just-in-time pricing in the manufacturing sector, and we're in the just-in-time pricing kind of deal on grains as well. In that we have no buffer from last year. We have no old crop stocks to speak of. And we're talking not just in the U.S., particularly on the bean side, but globally. And yet we've got demand continuing to grow 1, 3%. Well, you pick the number. So I think we're in a very different scenario than we were in 83, a very much different scenario than 88. And the government, the U.S. government, held stocks at that time. They're out of the game. So I think, you know, from that standpoint, we're going to see much more volatility. If the high's in, we're still going to see a lot of volatility. If the high's not in, still a lot of volatility.
Best piece of marketing advice at this point for a producer, corn and soybeans.
You got to use options that you have to play into the volatility.
I agree. You got to put some floor underneath the market, and the best way is options at this point.
I think it depends on everybody's individual situation. I think that, you know, insurance-wise, the guys know if they're in this particular situation where they need to definitely set a floor under the market. It's been talked about heavily, you know, with different types of insurance, including harvest price option. I would definitely want to look at that from an option standpoint, just simply because it's awfully hard to take a $2 margin call if that's what you end up being faced with. And I think guys need to talk to their bankers, because they'd be surprised at how willing they are to loan them a you know, a fairly significant amount of money for a hedge program this year.
All right. And then from each of you, what do you think the crop size is? Not necessarily from yourself, but what are the numbers that are floating around? We already heard one earlier in the program.
Well, I think the most significant thing for me is the total crop size on corn. And I know, you know, we saw an 11.5 today come out. And I personally don't think that we're going to get to an 11 myself for several different reasons. I think our harvested acres are going to be significantly lower. And whenever we take our yield times the acres that we actually do harvest, I think we're going to find out that we're going to have a real hard time getting to 11. And then on beans, you know, yield, I guess, is probably the way I'd talk beans. And I just think we're going to have a hard time getting to 30, you know, maybe 37, 37.5 right now for me, unless the weather changes significantly.
I think the market is focused on around a 130 yield right now on corn, somewhere in that 38 to 39 area. And obviously, as the week goes on and the weather pattern continues to stay the same, I think those numbers are going to gradually continue to go lower.
I thought the market was trading about a 134 on the corn bushel yield and probably around a 38.5 on the bean. I think those are numbers that we can deal with right now, although I think we have slipped from those points on the corn particularly. Beans, we know that the corn looks bad. We know that the Midwest corn crop is small. I don't think we factored in how small the bean crop could be.
That's Ellen Dearden. She's with AgriView. Aaron Curtis before her from Midco and Matt Bennett from TGM here too. Dan Bossi in just 2 minutes.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. It was yet another hot and dry week in Illinois. Temperatures in the state were running about 7 degrees above normal. Most of Illinois had reports of temperatures over 100 degrees, including readings up to 107. The good news is that some decent rains fell in parts of southern and northeastern Illinois with amounts between 1/2 to 1.5 inches. Elsewhere, the rains were sparse and widely scattered with amounts less than 1/4 inch in most cases. Because of the continued hot and dry weather, the U.S. Drought Monitor has expanded the coverage of extreme or D3 drought in Illinois. The expansion occurred across central Illinois and the northwest corner of the state. The forecast from the National Weather Service is more promising for Illinois in the coming weeks. The ridge of high pressure that has dogged us all summer has shifted to the west, allowing slightly cooler air to arrive in Illinois with more chances of rain. Temperatures are expected to be near normal this weekend and for much of the next 14 days. There is a chance of rain on Sunday and Monday with modest rainfall totals expected. The latest 6 to 10 day and 8 to 14 day forecast have most of Illinois in an increased chance of above normal precipitation. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. This is the July 27 edition of Commodity Week. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you from the University of Illinois. In studio with us today, Aaron Curtis of Midco, Ellen Dearden of AgriView, and Matt Bennett of TGM. On the phone line, Dan Bossi of Ag Resource Company. He's in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Dan. What's the primary focus of your research at this time when you look at the marketplace?
Well, you know, Todd, I don't disagree, and I think Matt, Aaron, and Ellen did a great job of explaining what's going on. I think our focus is really all the same, which is trying to get the crop right. I know we've been running around the country for the past 2 weeks, visiting many of the Midwest states, trying to make our measurements on corn fields. Of course, I've got a crop scout who does this every year, but we've expanded with a few other people helping them out, and it's a big chore. But you can't get the market right unless you get the crop right, and that's what we're trying to do right now.
Any early results you can talk to us about?
It's disappointing. I mean, I would be lying to anybody if we didn't find more zeros than we've ever found before of fields. I mean, south of I-70 in Illinois, it's like visiting the moon. There's lots of zeros out there. There'll be a lot of hard abandonment acres. We've cut our U.S. corn abandonment number down to 84.7, or our harvested acreage, excuse me, down to 84.7. That's about 3 million acres below USDA. And we keep coming down in our yield estimates every week. We are now down to 128, so we are now talking a sub-11 corn crop.
That is really low. Is the price high enough at this point to manage that, or would it need to have an 8 in front of it for sure?
Well, this is where it all gets a little fuzzy, because as you start modeling a sub-11 or maybe even as small as a 10-2 or 10-5 corn crop, and trying to decide what rationing needs to occur, of course, your skews start moving up very quickly. And, you know, some of our work would suggest that with that kind of corn crop and the rationing that we need to do, that corn needs to have a 9 or 10 in front of it. And so we've been suggesting to clients that those are market possibilities. If indeed the Iowa yields, which I think is the big swing state right now, comes in at 125 or under, maybe those prices are even too low. So who's going to go without is the big debate within our shop, and we do see the movement on ethanol, but even ethanol and reducing that annual usage much more than 4.6 or 4.7 is problematic in terms of the oxygen requirement and also clean air. So this is a work in progress, and we only try to take it one day at a time.
Yeah, Dan, obviously talking to producers, you know, it's awfully tough to make any sales on 12 right now. And we're talking strategies for the most part for these guys. And, you know, you can't really talk anything specific because there's a whole host of situations, whether it be their insurance needs or maybe they have oversold. But, you know, looking forward, what do you think the real opportunities in this market are? And are you going to be looking to set any traps into place as far as maybe marketing some 13 and even 14 corn, depending on what the price levels get to?
Well, we are really more focused at the moment on 13 and 14 and trying to find price levels which farmers can use. I guess I would remind all of them that we just have to remember back to the month of early June and saying, you know, where would the market be if we had normal weather? Those kind of schematics will probably fall, you know, carry forward again. I would imagine next year we'll plant 95 or 96 million acres of corn. Assuming a average year, you know, USDA, and we get stuff in the ground relatively quickly, could come out with a 164, 166. And, you know, if the heavens open up, we'll be in a somewhat bearish trend for 18 to 24 months. And so we've had three bad growing years in a row. If you look at those bad growing years and you assume that we had trend line yields, that would add an extra 6 billion bushel of corn, and you can imagine where price would be. So that being said, I do think longer term we do need to be concentrating on 13 and 14. It's just trying to time the old crop top and making sales on a scale-up basis in new crops.
I totally agree with you on that, Dan. Let me ask you something. What have you heard as far as seed goes? Because whenever I talk to people in the seed corn industry, the thing that I keep hearing the most is they're really, really scrambling to figure out how they're going to come up with the production necessary, you know, to get to even 90 million acres, let alone 95. And I just think it's something that maybe we're going to have to be looking really closely at moving forward on, you know, what's the functionality that's even going to happen?
Well, the seed industry tells me they're going to put a big program on in terms of South Africa, Argentina, and even portions of northern Brazil to get the seed produced and hopefully in the hands of producers. You know, where there's a will, there's a way in this business. And I do think even though there's going to be this shortage in the United States, they will be able to compensate from those locations overseas in a southern hemisphere basis. So I'm worried, but I'm not overly so, because I think maybe some of us will have to wait until March before the bags actually arrive on our farm. But I do think it will be available.
Dan, this is Aaron. Obviously, we've kind of stalled out a little bit here on corn right around $8. And I think the producer somewhat nervous when we get up to these high prices. And if you remember back last September, we broke pretty hard once kind of harvest started. What are some signs you're going to be looking for that maybe we are getting kind of some of this demand destruction? What are some of the signals that you're going to be watching?
Well, I don't think there's much doubt here. We're already seeing some demand destruction now. If you look at the ethanol grind, which is off 10% from its June high, if you look at U.S. corn export sales, you know, not moving along very robustly. Of course, negative cancellations or negative sales this week. I think the price is having its effect, though. The Brazilian or the spread between U.S. and Brazilian corn is narrowing quite rapidly, so we believe that much of that Brazilian or excess of Brazilian corn is getting absorbed in the marketplace. This, in my mind, is more of a timing issue than a price issue, and we've tried to talk around in our shop here that you know, we'd like to have sales done on increments, maybe so much by the end of August, maybe another slot by the middle or end of September, and you know, at least 60-70% sold by the end of October. Because in a supply-driven market, we think the highs will come probably with the October crop report. We're kind of targeting that time frame, which I guess if those people are looking at the insurance program, gives them a little more wiggle room, if you will, in terms of looking for a higher price from the U.S. government. But it's hard to pick a price. I must say I can't figure out the balance sheets. It's more about timing in my mind and when to make some sales going forward.
So are you in the similar boat then for beans?
I'm in a worse boat in beans. I mean, if you think the corn balance sheet is tough, I don't know how we figure out the bean balance sheet with record sales at this point and the knowledge anyway that we're going to have very strong soy product demand from overseas, and with reduced distillers grain production, we need more meal. And when we even think about this corn crop, which will likely be poor quality, by that I'm saying light test weight and lots of aflatoxin, we're going to need more of that protein to feed to our livestock. So the bean balance sheet is actually more problematic than the corn balance sheet, and there again, someone's going to probably have to go without if we're going to have pipeline end stocks, and I just haven't been able to figure out who that's going to be and where this all ends up. So forgive me if I skip your question, but these are tough times to look at balance sheets and make any kind of judgment how high is high, other than we know we probably haven't scored a seasonal high yet.
Okay, so what are the pitfalls?
Todd, if I look at them, is always the world economy. I mean, we know the world economy is slowing, though the banking community is seeming to be more accommodative this week. The other pitfall would be if somehow the Washington political leadership decides all of a sudden to get rid of ethanol, which I don't think is a very strong likelihood. But it's those kind of carpets that would be pulled from under the bulls that would give us problems. I still think that's a couple months away before all that can generate the kind of bearishness that this market could see. But again, you ask what the pitfalls are, those are the two that we're watching every day.
To what extent do you see Washington doing something as far as the mandate goes, first of all? And second of all, is there anything that they can do other than strictly with ethanol? I mean, I know a lot of the old timers have said, is there anything we would be looking at, doing anything with the exports or, you know, doing any sort of an embargo? I mean, obviously, those are things that get tossed around, and I don't know that the likelihood is near as high as it used to be. But what would your opinion on those two questions be?
Well, in terms of embargo, it's pretty easy. Since the Carter administration embargoed grain to Russia, our Congress put into place something that mandates that the president can declare an embargo, but the Congress has to vote to approve it. I don't think Congress can vote to approve much of anything these days, so I'm not too worried about an embargo being put in place anytime soon. In terms of ethanol, the mandate is always an open question, but you know, with the U.S. refining capacity for crude oil pretty much maxed out at 92-93%, if we were to get rid of ethanol, we somehow would have to import a finished petroleum product. And then how would you reach the oxygen requirement of the EPA? And so that's why I'm saying you could maybe get ethanol down to 4.6 or 4.7 with some kind of mandate adjustment, but I don't see it falling much below there, which really pushes a lot of onus on the livestock man or woman to cut their usage and increase herd liquidation, which down the road is not what we American grain producers really want.
I usually don't do this, but one final word from you. Any word that would be something you want to make sure listeners and farmers know about?
At this time, Todd, I think it's you know, we've got to get the crop right. I don't know how high is high. It's a scary time for everybody in American agriculture. This is a drought of epic proportion. It's a catastrophe, if you will, and I just think anybody who's short the board has got to be very careful, and we've got to measure our sales going forward.
Dan Bossi, of course, is with AgriSource Company out of Chicago, Illinois. Let's get our final words from the panelist in studio, Ellen Dearden.
Seems that we're hearing the word catastrophe, crisis, etc. quite a few times, and we're also seeing that people who ordinarily aren't in the market pretty happy with long positions. That gets me a little nervous.
Ellen Dearden is with AgriView out of Morton, Illinois. Aaron Curtis is with Midco in Bloomington.
Yeah, put some sort of plan in place using options. I think you have to have some floor on the market here as we move forward.
And Matt Bennett is with TGM out of Windsor.
I agree with Aaron, and I think the one thing I would tell all farmers is be a hedger only, and speculation should not be done at this point.
And that wraps up this July 27 edition of Commodity Week. Thanks so much for listening. You can find it again and listen anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. We'll